I'm so glad to be with you just for a few brief moments and just share some thoughts. And first of all, I have to congratulate you and encourage you and empower you to say what a great decision you've already made, and I know you have made, to participate in a ministry where you're being encouraged to take a look at your relationship and harness growth. Because this is a long journey that we all face in life, and especially marriage, an incredibly challenging, difficult pressure cooker of a relationship. And what better way to spend some time but to come in a ministry where you're encouraged to take a look at your life and encouraged to have a better relationship. Now, I can say this because since 1987, I've been a licensed professional counselor, licensed marriage and family therapist, and a certified sexual therapist. Now, that's since 1987, averaging 30 to 35 client hours a week since 1987, 50 weeks out of the year, times 27 gives me over 47,000 hours direct client contact, meeting with people, understanding their growth, understanding the obstacles to their growth, and encouraging them and empowering them and helping them navigate the challenging, long-term journey that we call marriage. So I want to give you just a couple of thoughts that might be helpful. And these are simple shifts in your thinking, but I think they can make a big difference, okay? So just three really simple shifts. Here's the first one. There's no such thing as working on your relationship or your marriage. I'm going to encourage you to think differently. You can only work on yourself while you're in a relationship. You can only work on yourself as you relate to others. Now, it's very natural, it's pretty common. I don't find anything going wrong when this happens. But naturally, when I'm meeting with couples, as they come to see me, I will probably ask them, "How can I be of help to you?" So after a long pause where they make eye contact and they're trying to decide who's going to say what out of the starting gate, because whoever says something first is kind of being vulnerable. And maybe one of them, after this pregnant pause and they're jockeying for position, one might say, "Well, we're here to work on our relationship." Now, I have great empathy for that. I get the concept. I think that's good. They're both there meeting with me, admitting we need some help. But I've also, kind of through the years, have understood that it's pretty natural that what that phrase might mean, more often than not, is when a person says, "We're here to work on our relationship," usually what it means is, "I'm here to work on my spouse's half of the relationship because I don't really like what's going on in this relationship. And if I can focus on them because I managed to bring them to therapy, I managed to bring them to re-engage, I added a little leverage, if I can just get them here, therapist, me and you will team up. And Lord knows I have tried and tried and tried to influence, change, and correct this other person that I live with who is driving me crazy. So together we will form a great team, and together we will see a transformative process occur in this other person, my spouse." That's natural. Now, of course, the other person is going, they're just watching all this take place. Because you usually have one person who's a little more motivated and a little less motivated. That's natural. Rarely in my 27 years have I found people who are 50-50 exactly motivated in the exact same way. That's very rare. Somebody's a little more motivated. Do you know, before marriage, it is very natural that when we encounter some challenges in life, we tend to take a look at our own life and make some shifts and changes. We might even seek out some help with a therapist or a discipler or a mentor or a teacher. And did you know it is very, very natural that after we get married, we view our problems as outside of ourselves? It's as if we're saying, you know, I wasn't this way before I got married, and now I'm acting like a crazy person, and let me think here. The only thing that's new is you. It is because of you that I am this way. I was never this way, and besides, I'm not this way with all my closest friends. I'm a crazy person with you. You are driving me crazy, hence, you are my problem. Now, you can imagine, if something outside of me is the problem, where is my solution? Outside of me. This means I've got to change you. So if when I go home tonight, I encounter problems on the North Dallas Tollway, and it's all stacked up, I'm going to have to change everybody on the tollway for me to have a better experience going home. Now, that kind of illogical thinking plagues us in something as simple as marriage. Do you know what you get when you practice a bad golf swing? Do I have any golfers in here? I'm a golfer. Can you imagine what do you get when you rehearse and practice a bad golf swing over and over and over? You get a better bad golf swing. Do you know relationally, when we practice negative patterns, guess what we get? Better negative patterns. I always want you to remember, in rehearsing relationship patterns, practice does not make perfect. Did you know that? Practice makes permanent. The more we rehearse bad patterns in a relationship, the better bad patterns we will get. Which, of course, increases our frustration even more. Right? So let's make a shift in our thinking. Rather than think, hey, I'm here to work on our relationship, which means I'm here to work on the other person, let's make a simple shift in our thinking. Instead of confronting your spouse, instead of praying that they change, which you can pray that, but it's outside of your control, instead of confronting your spouse to improve the relationship, a simple shift. Confront yourself first. In fact, if you want your spouse to confront themselves, model it by confronting yourself. Instead of working on the relationship, work on the one thing that I guarantee you can improve. I'll guarantee it. You can improve having and being a better you. What will happen with your spouse? We don't know. It's called you're going to have courage and trust. In fact, one way of constantly focusing on the other person is to get out of courage, faith, and trust. It never really works. So this is a very, very simple shift. It just simply means I'm taking responsibility for what I can take responsibility for. And in fact, this is the very best gift you can give to the person you love and care about the most. The most significant person in your life, this other person, the very best gift you can give them is the gift of working on yourself and seeing an improved self. They might fall down and go, oh, there is a God in heaven. I never thought I would live to see the day that you would actually see this about yourself, take responsibility, ownership, and improve it. Miracles can happen by making a simple shift. Now, the spirit of this kind of shift, we know, is found in Psalm 139. Look at that. Where David, after a wonderful psalm where he expresses God's complete knowing of him, knows when he sits down, when he rises up, knew him in his mother's womb. At the end of this complete knowledge and filled with love, this is what David says at the very last two verses of the psalm. He invites God, search me, O God, because you love me, because I trust in you, because you only have my well-being, search me, know my heart, try me, put me under a stress test, put me on the witness stand, cross-examine me, know my anxious thoughts, and see if there be any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. Now this is the simplicity of his request. I can't see myself. My spouse can see me. Lord knows. They're telling me all the time. Help me see me. Help me know how I impact others. And if there's any way that I can do a face plant on the sidewalk, I want to avoid that. Show me the way everlasting, because I don't want to be in unnecessary pain. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm all for the pain that comes with life improvement and stretching myself and growing so that I can improve in life. I'm all for a healthy, productive, stretching and growing kind of pain. It's very invigorating because we get a positive reward. What I am not about in my office, and I sometimes take a poll and a vote in my office, is anybody for unnecessary pain? Do you just can't wait to get up in the morning and experience a lot of unnecessary pain that you could avoid? No. I am for getting rid of unnecessary pain in our life. Counterproductive pain. Pain which does no good except produce more pain. I am for a healthy, stretching, growing pain that we get the great benefit and great joy. This is that kind of switch. Search me, O God. I want you to think of marriage as a pressure cooker, not as a vending machine that we pop in a couple dollars and get our needs met. I know we tend to think marriage is a relationship where my needs are going to get met. I would encourage you, throw away that word, never use it again, because need usually implies demand, which usually implies require. I require. Why? Because they're my needs. I demand. Why? Because they're my needs, and you're supposed to meet them. Trust me, in a marriage relationship, some needs will get met, but you don't start by talking constantly about your needs. It gets old, really. It becomes very unattractive. Blah, 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 blah. About your needs. Blah, blah, blah. We just become a terrorist waving a gun. Somebody meet my needs or somebody's going to get shot. This is no way to motivate the most significant, important person in your life to show love by waving a gun and constantly talking about needs. Rather, marriage is a pressure cooker. God throws us in this pressure cooker, clamps the lid down, adds a little water, puts it on the stove, and it starts heating and tenderizing the meat inside. That's you. This whole thing is a grand design by God. Everything's going right. We think it's going wrong. This grand design is to teach us how to love somebody so different than we ourselves. Can you imagine that? I have to remind my couples, you did not marry yourself. You married not you. Did you know you're in a relationship with somebody who's so not you? Have you ever thought about that? Now this year is my 30th year being married. I've got 3 kids, 27, 24, and 21. My wife, if you got to know me, is so radically opposite from me. It's staggering. Take the exact opposite of all that I am. It's my wife. We laugh about it. We go, how did we wind up together? Now, this winding up together has caused both of us to tremendously grow so that our love remains alive. She gave up trying to change me a long time ago. Thank goodness. I gave up trying to change her. Now, here's another simple shift, okay? This is so simple, you can fall out of your chair. Staggeringly simple, yet profound. Did you know in my 27 years of helping people, I have never, ever, ever seen imperfections, sins, differences in how people relate and differences in how they approach the world, and I have never seen conflict kill love in any marriage. Let me go over that again. I have never seen conflict, differences, nor imperfections kill love in a marriage. Ever. I don't even believe those are the source of our problems. Here's what kills love. Lack of self-awareness. I don't know how I really come across to others and impact people I love the most. I lack awareness. Lack of ownership. I deny, minimize, excuse make, blame shift, and self-justify. And everything you say to me, I go, yes, but, yes, but, yes, but, yes, but you, yes, but you, yes, but. So I deny, minimize, rationalize, and blame shift. And I lack humility, lack of self-awareness, lack of personal ownership, and lack of humility kill love between two people who have committed their lives together. Do you know why it kills love? Because if I'll have lack of awareness, lack of ownership, minimizing, blame shifting, yes butting, justifying, rationalizing, denying, and I have lack of humility, you are left with what I refuse to own. Do you get this? You are left with it. Now you have to tolerate me. Got it? You don't like me. I have lack of awareness. When brought up, I deny it, rationalize, minimize, blame shift, and justify, and push back on you. And I have lack of humility. You get to tolerate me and love me for Jesus' sake, but you don't like me. Do you know, in my office, the moment a person says, I think I see this is about me. You didn't cause it in me, you revealed it. You didn't cause it in me, you revealed what was already inside of me. It's my bad. It's my ownership. I'm wrong. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. At that moment, that person becomes an attractive person. And desire and attraction come alive. You want to come close to them. When they deny, blame, shift, minimize, rationalize, justify, and put it on the other person, and actually believe, if I can just get you to accept and listen to me and understand me, my problems will be solved. When they go that direction, we tolerate them. They're not attractive people. The moment they own and have humility, watch people draw near to them. Watch the spouse say, I like you. I believe in you. Thank you. It's a very simple shift. Do you know, often we contribute to the very thing that we complain about in the other person, and we can't even see it. Lastly, here's a final suggestion. In your marriage, in the most significant relationship you could ever have, please don't focus on negatives to get a positive. Is that upside down or what? This is what married couples do. They constantly focus on the negatives of the other person, pointing out deficiency after deficiency after deficiency, complaining, 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 actually believing that if they are more negative and complain more, the other person will find the positive value, rise up and go, oh my gosh, thank you, I married an unpaid consultant. I love it. I would have never seen this about myself. Thank you for all the negatives that you can see about my life. I am now a better person for it, and I'm happy. I don't know anybody who does that. The more you point out their negatives, the more defensive they get. I got it, blah, blah, and they tune you out. And then you get louder. If you can't influence your spouse through a positive relationship connection, you're not going to influence them through a negative. Did you hear that? Think of it this way. There's two methods of influence. You can either assume a position of protest, 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 in order to get them to change. I would suggest drop your billboard, drop your placard, drop your big sign, I protest, I protest, I protest. Your arms are getting heavy. Just drop it. Assume a position of invitation. Honey, would you please consider? Then let them consider and find the value. If they can't find the value for themselves, they're not going to find it for you. Even if you threaten to kill yourself, they're not going to find it for you. And if they do, I don't know what you got. You just waved a gun and held a gun to their head and they said, okay, I'll do what you want me to do. But you don't have their heart and you know it. And marriage is about heart. Okay, lastly, these three simple shifts can make a big difference. Here they are. Work on yourself rather than the relationship. Increase your own self-awareness as you're in re-engage. Increase your personal ownership. Own everything that God shows you. No ifs, ands, or buts, and no self-justifications, no blame shifting. Be humble. Say, I think this is about me. You didn't cause it in me, you reveal it in me. And focus on the positives. And out of a positive relationship, see if you can influence your spouse out of the positives. Bless you on your journey. It's a privilege to be with you. Be encouraged. It's a great journey. God has you in it. He'll show up for you. Thanks so much.
Hey, if this is your first time here to re-engage,